I'm James Hoyt, one of the lead designers of 4th edition and author of the Eberron trilogy, The Draconic Prophecies, and you're listening to The Tome.
Tome episode 61. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interviews show, and I am your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. In this episode, we will be inheriting a power beyond reckoning with Heirs of Ash. This episode is brought to you by Sinister Adventures at sinisteradventures.com. Sinister Adventures is a new gaming company bringing you edgy fantasy and dark future adventures designed for a score of different game systems, so no matter what you're playing, Sinister Adventures can provide you with a good time. You may also notice a slight slowdown in the podcast coming up. It turns out that in the beginning of June, I'm going to be moving 1,200 miles away off to North Carolina. The timing of this really sucks for the podcast, since I'll be moving the same week that the 4th edition D&D books come out. But I have some things in mind to try to get you news and reviews on those 4th edition books as quickly as possible. If you want to know more, check out the forum over at thetomeshow.com. Well, without any more chatter, I had a chat with Will and Jeffrey D. Wynn, regular contributors of the show, about the Eberron series, Heirs of Ash. So, here they are. Hey, this is your Tome host, Jeff Greiner, and today I'll be talking about Heirs of Ash... I'll be talking about the Heirs of Ash trilogy by Rich Wolf for Eberron. It is a book that came out at the end of 2007, and I guess to be clear, I'm not actually going to be doing much talking about this book, having not read it myself. I've brought in Jeffrey D. Wynn and Will, who have both been on the show before, and they're going to let us know what this book is about. Gentlemen, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So why don't you go ahead and get us started and let us know, what is the general plot of this story? What is this story sort of all about?
This story is about a team of adventurers who are traveling around Eberron on an airship on a quest.
Okay, and what kind of quest are they going? What are they doing on this quest?
Everyone on this ship has ties to a legendary artificer whose name was Ashram Decanith. Which is where we get the title of the book, Heirs of Ash. And he was apparently a big shot artificer who invented lots of nifty things. And he was also a pacifist. And towards the end of the war, he was really striving to bring about peace. And he invented this thing called the Legacy, which was supposed to bring an end to the war. But as Eberron fans know, the mourning happened and the war just sort of ended. And Ashram was killed along with the mourning, so he never got to use his device.
And nobody
knows. So all these people are trying to pick up the pieces of Ashram's legacy, I guess.
What'd you say, Will?
And nobody ever knew exactly what the legacy was, either. If I remember right, throughout most of the books, they keep going, well, we think it's on this ship, or so and so has it. I forget the villain's name.
We do find out what the legacy is. It's a small gray cylinder of metal. It's a magic item, artifact that has the power to negate all magic within a large area.
Doesn't that happen later though? I thought for the first like book and a half we don't find out what it is.
It's halfway through the second book that the villain uses it.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Right before
they go to Frostfell.
Oh, okay.
So who are the main characters then in this story?
The book has got so many characters.
I've tried to keep track of them. I would say the hero is Tristram. Would you say that, Will? He's sort of the main character.
He becomes the main character. Originally, it's a girl,
Yes, it starts out with Saren, and Saren leads you to Dallin, and Dallin leads you to everyone else. And it's sort of, the first book is sort of this ensemble piece.
Right, it's sort of a typical first episode of a show going, here's all the characters, here's how they got together, this is sort of how they're going to be interacting.
But all the characters are cool, though. That's what I like about this book. There's no really dead weight characters.
Yeah, there's no throwaway character.
Except maybe the dwarf. But.
Well, the dwarf is there for comedic dwarf value. He's for tossing.
Got it. Okay. Well, then the dwarf has value. I really can't think of any character in this series that I did not like. They were all pretty good, and I can remember all of their names. You know, it's not like here's Bob the fighter, whose name I'm going to forget in five pages.
So with that many characters all brought in this sort of large ensemble, did, even though all of them were relatively likable, did any of them, I mean, was there a lot of characterization? Could you really get into it and get behind some of the characters?
Every character, I think, spoke with his own voice. Every character was distinct. The one that always stands out in my mind is Zed Arthan, the former knight turned detective.
Yeah, he was my favorite too, actually. I enjoyed him in the Warforged.
Omax.
Yes, Omax. Omax, who used to be a warrior, and decided to try to find inner peace after a disaster of some sort.
He was trapped in a monastery for like several decades.
Right.
Trapped under rubble.
Right, and then Tristram came and saved him and repaired him. And that's why he follows him around like a puppy.
And he's always wearing this hat. He's always described as having this shapeless wool hat, which I don't quite know what that looks like.
I like to picture it with ear flaps.
I guess. What, like earmuffs?
Oh, well, you know those big wool hats they wear in the very cold climates to have the little ear flaps?
Oh, like ski hats?
Maybe, yeah.
That would look pretty sick.
Yes, that's why I like to picture it that way. Because he has no ears anyway. He has no need at all for a hat. Why not put ear flaps on it?
Good thinking.
It could be a cowboy hat or a top hat. It doesn't matter. This is just the way I picture it. They never really describe it. It's just a hat.
It's just a hat. Dallin also has a hat. It's like a shapeless wool hat. The author has this thing for shapeless wool hats. I think you should go look up a hat dictionary and actually find some names for these hats, at least so that we know what they look like.
See, now I'm picturing a Warforged with a derby on.
That would be cool.
Yes, there's a giant man made of metal and wood wearing a derby doing kung fu. Huh.
Huh. Crazy.
I'd read that book.
So it sounds like there's still quite a bit then of characterization, or at least description, that doesn't happen since you do have such a large cast.
I thought they did a good job on most of the characters. Some of the characters had more ground they needed to cover, like the former knight. He used to be a paladin, and then he refused to follow what could be considered
his commander.
The immoral orders. Right. His commander ordered effectively the slaughter of helpless sort of combatants. Is that
helpless
right?
People. Civilians, really.
Oh, okay. And he refused. I can't remember whether or not he killed her.
No, he saw two of his comrades dragging off a helpless female cleric into an alley, and they were going to do something bad to her, and in a fit of rage he slew them, and that's when he lost his paladinhood, because he slew his own comrades to defend this cleric of another religion.
I didn't correctly remember the killing. I was not making up that he killed somebody, and that's how he lost it.
Right.
So how do all these characters end up working together towards presumably similar goals?
They're all brought together by Dallin, who is the owner of the ship. He's a funny guy because he's really I'm trying to figure out a word that I can use that would be clean on this podcast. Will, you want to help me out?
I'm going with manipulative so far.
Yeah, he's very manipulative, and he says to you exactly what he's thinking. He doesn't pull punches, and he's also very verbose. If you ask him a question, he will explain in detail exactly what he thinks and exactly why he thinks it, and it's usually very funny.
And it very often leaves the person who asks regretting that they bothered him at all.
Yeah, he talks a lot.
Okay, so they all get together and they're on this airship, and how does this proceed into whatever, you know, the larger story, the interaction? Are they hunting for this artifact
It starts out they're trying to find Marth. Marth is our villain. And in the beginning, Saren and Dallin have business with Marth because Marth killed Saren's friend, and Marth had business dealings with Dallin in the past and betrayed him, and someone else, the other paladin, Irena, is also trying to find Marth because he's a criminal. And it starts out as this hunt for Marth because he's a bad guy, and he's somehow messed with all of these people who are now brought together and are trying to find him, and they're also trying to find the legacy before he uses it for nefarious purposes.
Yeah, usually he's killed somebody.
He killed a priest who was a friend of Ashram. That's why the paladin's hunting him.
Right, and he killed the, what was her name, Saren?
He killed Saren's mentor. Saren starts out as a rogue. She's like a small time country girl who comes to the big city, and she's very luckily befriended by this old rogue who is actually nice to her and doesn't try and take advantage of her, and teaches her how to be a real urban rogue. And
a father figure to her, but that could just be me reading into it.
Yeah, he was something like a father figure to her, and he's the biological father of the female paladin Irena, which sort of makes Saren and Irena kind of sisterly in a way. And where was I going with this?
I don't know. I don't remember any sisterly bonds ever cropping up, though.
They have a few exchanges. Maybe I'm just imagining it.
I can totally see me missing the one moment where they realize and they have their
there's definitely a moment where like Irena approaches Saren and is like, Saren, you know, I believe in you. You carry the legacy of my father, or something like that. I don't remember. It's not important.
Okay.
Jeff, what was the question?
You were telling us about how they got together to hunt down. Was it Marth?
Marth is a changeling, and he was also. Like everyone else in the story, he was formerly a friend or an employee of Ashram, but he went to the bad side after Ashram died. He's a former Siren, and he's one of those Sirens who blames the rest of the world for the destruction of Ciri, and he wants to get revenge on the whole world because it's their fault, and he's angry.
It's not all he's angry about, though.
Well, there's also like he's a changeling, and he was in the Siren army, and when the Siren army found out he was a changeling, they killed his family and they killed his children, and he was pretty upset about that.
But they didn't kill him. Why would they kill his family and not him?
He escaped and managed to kill all of the officers who were behind the killings, and he was, I guess, thrown out of the army after that, or he ran away and hooked up with Ashram.
Okay, so if I'm understanding correctly, the general story is that your main villain goes through some tough times and decides to go on this tear of vengeance. Along the way, he manages to get a hold of this artifact and also kill a bunch of people whose friends and relatives then band together to hunt him down and stop him.
Right. And we eventually find out it's not just simple vengeance. He's being guided by this prophet named Zamiel, who is this shriveled old man who's a monk. He wears copper robes, and it's pretty obvious that there's something not quite right about it. And I won't give away what it is, but you'll probably guess it if you read the book long before it's revealed. It's not terribly.
Yeah, it's not a huge surprise to anyone who's been paying attention.
But yeah, he's a sneaky little Zamiel. He's a sneaky little person who's basically been manipulating everyone in the story.
Yeah, he had previously advised Ashram and then somebody else, and he had considered, well, if Marth doesn't work out, then maybe Tristram will be easy to manipulate.
Yeah.
So if this prophet or what have you was advising the original Ash, who is the
he was the one who helped Ashram construct the legacy and told him to use it to bring about peace, and now he's advising Marth and helping him use the legacy to bring about war.
So is he somewhat responsible for the Mornland too then?
No, the Mornland's a separate thing.
Okay, I thought you had said previously that there was a connection between this Ashram and the creation of the Mornland.
Well, the Mornland is sort of this thing in Eberron that's never really explained. It crops up in every book. It's a part of the setting. Basically, 4 years ago, an entire country was destroyed in a massive magical explosion, and no one knows why it happened or how it happened. It's just a part of the campaign setting, and no one ever answers it.
It wasn't even an explosion. You could sort of reason out an explosion from the outside. I always think of it as it was almost just a flood of negative energy, and then everyone just dropped dead, and that was it.
It was a bad.
Yeah, things don't even rot time in the Mornland.
Okay, so they have fairly recently said that Eberron novels are not going to be considered canonical. They're not going to impact the campaign setting, and because they want to make sure that people playing in the setting are always the heroes and what have you. Was this then written before that? And do you know, is this going to be part of the canon?
I really doubt it. That it'll be part of the canon.
It was started like 2 years ago, but I don't think they're going to make this story part of the canon.
Okay.
The last book would not be good for the canon.
What's that, Will?
I don't think the last book would be good for the canon. Near the climax, Martha's final, the final act of Marth. What he does with the legacy.
Oh yeah. There were no permanent changes to the world that resulted from that. So, I mean, that's kind of how Eberron novels are. You know, lots of stuff almost happens. You know, lots of people almost die, but at the end of the story, everything's fine, and you can use any of the campaign books as if the story never happened.
That's true.
So how well then does this series of books fit in with people who are familiar with Eberron? I mean, is it very clear that this is an integrated story into the world of Eberron, or could this have been placed in a dozen different worlds?
No, this is very much a part of Eberron. And I mean, the quest centers around one of the, what are they called? The mage, Dragonmark houses.
Dragonmark houses.
Yeah, it centers around the Dragonmark houses and airships.
Have there been any Eberron novels yet that haven't centered around Dragonmark people in some way, shape, or form?
Yeah, a couple of them I know haven't centered around them, or at least their mark and their house weren't a big part of it.
Okay. There's certain things that sort of crop up in every Eberron book, just like, you know, in Final Fantasy, you always have a Chocobo or you always have a Cid. You know, there's always, in every Eberron book, there's always going to be some Warforged somewhere doing something.
Right. It's like playing in a modern game and not running into Walmart or McDonald's.
Sure.
That's what they are. They're the giant corporations of Eberron.
I suppose, yeah. So would you say that this is a book that you would recommend to people who are interested in, I guess, immersing themselves more into the Eberron setting?
I would recommend this book to anyone. I think it's a very good trilogy. It's got very solid characters. And whether you're a fan of Eberron or whether you're new to Eberron, I think you'll find something to appreciate here.
Okay, good. What about you, Will? Who would you recommend this book to?
Well, certainly people that are familiar with Eberron or Dungeons & Dragons sort of in general. I'm not sure about just anyone, though. Just because I know there are a lot of people out there who just don't want to read fantasy.
Well, anyone who's into fantasy, then.
Okay, I'll go with that.
So then, how does this series stack up against the many, many D&D-based novels out there?
Just the Eberron or all of them?
Either, or both, or all.
Speaking as someone who has read every single Eberron novel since the inception of the series, I would rank this pretty high. This was a pretty good trilogy. I like the fact that all the characters stood out and there were no useless characters. They all spoke with their own voice. They all had their own path that was finished by the end of the story. And there were just lots of really good characters, and it was a really good, solid, epic story.
Yeah, I've got to agree with that. I kind of like the Lost Mark better, but that was But part of that was because there was three or four characters and it followed them very closely, and they were very human characters.
We might have to have words later. I did not like that show.
I didn't like the ending, but
I didn't like the ending or the beginning or most of the middle. So
okay. But I'm a strange person.
But in either case, both of you are saying that this is one of the better Eberron books out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in addition to having none of the characters being deadweight, the book avoids things like In the Left Hand of Death or Blade of the Flame, where one character is Batman. He can do everything.
Yeah.
There's no character that can do that.
Yeah, I didn't like Blade of the Flame or Left Hand of Death for those reasons. It was just one. But in fact, I even said that in my review of Left Hand of Death. The guy was Batman.
Yeah.
And I would open this up to not just fantasy fans liking this book, but anyone who likes anime or Star Wars. There's a lot of notes from those kinds of genres in this book. I mean, Tristram is your typical anime hero. He's, you know, like a long-haired young kid who's very eager to prove himself, very sensitive to criticism. He's pretty much any young anime hero.
And Mark is
Darth Vader to me.
I think he's a little more tragic than Darth Vader.
He's a little bit more human, and there's more character to him. But I mean, just the fact that his name is Marth,
yeah,
and Darth, plus he's working for this shadowy figure who's even more mysterious and powerful than he is, and he's not the real bad guy.
So did
and
you?
And got airships, so that's kind of like Star Wars.
Yeah. So did you notice at all in the story, was there a feel of any sort of an Asian influence?
Only the Warforged monk. He was about it.
Well again, just Tristram strikes me as a very anime character, because thinking of him and Omak standing next to each other kind of reminds me of the two guys from Full Metal Alchemist. Which I've never seen, but there's always that long-haired kid and the robot.
I guess
it's kind of brought up that image.
I'm just curious because I'm looking at some of the other works that Rich Wolf has done, and he's done a lot of work in the setting of The Legend of the Five Rings,
mm-hmm.
which is a very Asian-based setting, and so I just wondered if that was maybe a specialty of his that would bleed into his other works too. But it sounds like there's an element of that, but otherwise it seems to stay very fantasy.
Yeah, it's mostly Western. It's a mix of action and fantasy and lots of things.
I didn't see any overt Oriental or Asian, whichever we're calling it this week. Influences. There was some stuff about duty, and there might have been something about honor and nationalism to do with Marth and Seer, but that was about it.
Okay.
Yeah, nothing we would think of as Asian.
Right.
Well, good. Any last thoughts that either one of you would want to bring to the listeners? Let them know what anything else they might need to know about The Heirs of Ash trilogy.
It's a good book. Go out and buy it. Well, it's a good three books. So
yeah, but it could have been one book. There's no period between each books.
Well, it would have been 900 pages.
I meant the time wise between the books. You finish one book and then you pick up the next one and it's like a week later. It's not 2 years later. This was going on.
Right.
And as a relatively new author, it looks like to the world here, would you recommend, or do you think that you'll want to check out more things by Rich Wolf in the future?
I hope he writes more. I hope he writes more books with these characters. I think there's more stories that he could tell with some of the side characters in this book.
Like the dwarf.
Possibly. Was that?
Like the dwarf.
Like a dwarf, yeah.
And maybe he can avoid being tossed this time.
I was sort of thinking of Zed.
Yeah, like I would like to see more with Zed.
I would be interested in finding more about the background of the halfling.
You know, so would I. Well, just on a more general note, I'm curious to know what will happen to the Eberron setting and the novels after 4th edition.
Well, you should see my review of Storm Dragon.
Well, okay, then this is our discussion of the Heirs of Ash trilogy, and it sounds like both of our tome experts here are recommending that people probably listening to this show run out and check out all three books. It sounds like something that you guys really got into.
Yep. I read the first two in the course of about a week and a half, and then I was very upset that the next book wasn't coming out for 6 months.
Great. And thanks both of you again for being on the show. And of course, I look forward to hearing more things from both of you in the future.
Thanks.
All right. So long.
Well, okay. There's Heirs of Ash, brought to you by Jeffrey D. Wynn and Will. Now for a quick word from our sponsor.
Buy the Ebon Shroud by Sinister Adventures. You'll be able to enjoy all the imagery and good bits written by me, Richard Pett, and also have a laugh into the bargain at the bad bits, which will be written by Linkless Logue.
And thank you once again, Sinister Adventures, for sponsoring this episode of The Tome. Well, that's episode 61. Please, don't forget to email thetomeshow@gmail.com with your feedback and contributions. Be part of the discussion on the forums and support the show by buying stuff that you're going to get anyway over at The Tome's Amazon store. These can both be found at thetomeshow.com. And if you can help the show get noticed, it helps out a ton. So, get out there and let someone know. Maybe head over to your favorite online forum and start a thread called Online Gaming Sources to check out, and then post a link to the show. The Tome is also a member of Goblin, the gaming broadcast network, and the Fistful of Comics and Games podcast cooperative, for lack of a better name at this time. This has been episode 61, Heirs of Ash, of
The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome.
Hello, I'm Greg Vaughn, game designer for Sinister Adventures, and I'm just here to say that Nick's a model citizen and fine purveyor of adventurous fun. In fact, my own adventure, Dark Vistas No. 3, The Haunted Hills of Harrowfar, may just be the best adventure ever written. Okay, Nick, I said it. Do I get my money now?